Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. Nick Erie hanging out with you here for another 2 hours as we bring hurricane weather to Buffalo. I don't know what's happening outside. It's pretty nasty outside. We've got tropical storm like surges over the lake. It's been a weird year, okay guys. I don't know what to tell you otherwise. I guess we should just talk about football because things are happening outside that I don't want to talk about. Let's go to the Western Hotline where my man Evan Silva joins me. He is the co-founder of Establish the Run, which is a great platform. If you haven't had an opportunity yet, you can follow him on Twitter at Establish the Run. Evan, first and foremost, man, it's been a few months. Hopefully all is well, business is well. I hope you and the family are doing good, man. It's good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you too. Yeah, just hoping for sports, just like everybody else, you know. And I don't know. I definitely have days where I become more pessimistic. There are some days where I'm more optimistic, although the optimistic days have been a little bit further and far between recently.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. It seems like, you know, every time it's that one step forward, two steps back type of mentality. With just with everything going on, and, you know, we spent the first hour here, Evan, talking about, you know, I hate using, like, the term unfair because life is unfair, right? I mean, and this virus doesn't care about, you know, people and watching sports live. It's just the way that it goes. But, you know, here in Erie County, in Buffalo, in New York State, right, like, we were the epicenter of this thing. And we mistakes were made, but they were made early. And I think that New York State and Buffalo in particular really figured it out. I mean, in New York, 1% of the positive test of the 70,000 that were yesterday that were surpassed, 1% of them came from New York State. And, you know, if there's one city that has done what it's going to take to get fans in the stands, I want to put Buffalo as that city. And the problem is there just is no universal there isn't a compass to this. There's not any standard to be set. So therefore, even though a place like Buffalo might be ready, it's very clear Houston and Miami and Atlanta, these other states, these other cities with teams in it are not. And it's unfortunate because I think we're all a little frustrated when you see that Houston's, you know, ICUs are being completely overflown, because at this point that shouldn't be the issue. And that, and again, I hate saying, well, now it's going to affect us watching football, and now I'm extra mad about it. But in the grand scheme of things, we talked about this, Evan. It's like football is the great uniter, right? And this is the toughest thing about this is, you know, sitting next to a guy that you might have sit next to as a season ticket holder for the last 10 years. You know, you're going to miss out on opportunities to watch football this year, and it sucks, but at the end of the day, like, that's what we're in right now, and it's kind of a hole we dug ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, you know, for the past 4 months, I actually hid out in my parents' house in, like, the deep suburbs of St. Louis. I live in Chicago. I just wanted to get my daughter and I away from like the real high concentration areas. And it was interesting living out there. Very few people wear masks out there. And, you know, I come back to Chicago now and everyone is wearing a mask. And Illinois has actually done a pretty good job, relatively speaking, of keeping it contained. So I, you know, all I have to contribute there is just please wear a mask, because, that really has been a difference maker in certain spots across the USA.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, man. And, you know, one of the things that I kind of started getting to in my conversation last segment was, you know, I start to wonder, not that fantasy football already isn't like one of the most popular things in the world, but, you know, I wonder if fans are not able to go and watch games live. Do you expect to see maybe memberships? Do you expect to see, you know, teams? Do you expect to see maybe someone who has for a long time only played one fantasy football team, now he might want to use three or four teams? Do you expect the, I don't know, growth of fantasy football to maybe even take a spike this year, considering it's pretty populated as it is? But with the way that this season is looking like it'll go, I wonder if we see a big spike in popularity.
Well, I certainly think strongly, and I would even say no, that the thirst for sports is really, really strong, that the thirst for sports betting and fantasy football is really, really strong. We don't even know if there's going to be a season right now, and there are still people in FFPC, in FFPC high-stakes draft, drafting teams that cost $1,850 so that they can, you know, just because they want to draft a team, you know, in terms of fantasy football. And we don't even know if there's going to be a season. There are people betting on these golf tournaments that no one would normally even care the slightest about. I mean, Mickelson isn't playing, Tiger Woods isn't playing, and you know, people are playing on DraftKings, and, you know, they're really soaking it up. I mean, these unknown golfers are all of a sudden becoming, like, favorites. You know, among like the betting community, and, you know, like golfers that no one would even ever have like heard of normally, you know. So the thirst is really, really strong. I would say that if we do get a football season, and it is, even if it's reduced, even if the games are reduced, I mean, certainly I don't even know if we're going to have any kind, what kind of a training camp are
right.
we going to have. I have no idea. Are we going to have a single preseason game? I would lean toward predicting zero preseason games right now, and a, you know, a slightly shortened season. So, but I think that even in that event, people want to have some skin in the game, you know, and the legalization of sports betting has begun to circulate around the USA. So, absolutely, I expect a spike in interest in fantasy football, sports betting, all that kind of stuff.
Evan Silva here on the Wester Hotline. You can follow Evan on Twitter at Evan Silva. He is one of the co-founders of Establish the Run, and you can go check out his website, establishtherun.com. Evan, you and I joke around, but I asked you to come on the show, and you're like, absolutely, but only if we get to talk about 2020 MVP Josh Allen, which is my favorite part of you. So let's talk a little bit about this season, because, you know, obviously the stakes are high, and whether or not the season happens now almost kind of takes a back seat to, is there maybe more pressure on any other young quarterback? And maybe you could say Sam Darnold, and I'd probably agree with you, but it almost seems like he has a built-in out clause in his career with Adam Gase and that Jets team in general, whereas there is literally no out clause for Josh Allen. This is maybe, I can't remember a third-year quarterback have more pressure on him to succeed. And I want to think Mitchell Trubisky, but there wasn't this outside pressure that I think that really exists with Josh Allen. Can you think of another example of a guy who has this much pressure, but it just doesn't seem like it with Josh? He just doesn't really wear that pressure on his sleeve at all.
That's exactly what I was going to say, is that he doesn't seem like a guy that really succumbs to pressure. And you know, he kind of is like a sort of carefree dude. He's really smart. Remember, he had like an incredible Wonderlic score. I think he had like 37 or something like that on the Wonderlic. Really smart guy, and just kind of, you know, young and living his life. And, you know, he's definitely does not carry that pressure on his sleeve. So, and they just, the infrastructure around him right now is really impressive. I had skepticism at first about the Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott regime, but I mean, I've done a 180 on that. I love the way they've built the team analytically. You know, they understand that Josh Allen's deep ball has a lot of room for improvement. So what do? they make an entirely analytical move, and they go get the best deep ball receiver in the league in Stephon Diggs. I like the state of the offensive line. I like the depth of the offensive line. I like the fact that they have, especially in a year where it looks like people aren't, you know, teams aren't even going to be practicing, essentially, that they are returning, that they have a ton of continuity at head coach, at offensive coordinator, at defensive coordinator, and pretty much throughout the entire offense around Josh Allen, with the exception of Stephon Diggs. But what do they, I mean, they're pulling Isaiah McKenzie and Duke Williams and Robert Foster out of the offense and inserting Stephon Diggs, you know, in maybe the single biggest personnel upgrade of the entire offseason. If you're talking about what they were working with at that receiver position last year and now what they have this year. So I really, really like the way that the Bills are building. And I think they're going to win a bunch of games, assuming that there are a bunch of games this year.
So before we maybe dive a little deeper on Josh Allen, the Stephon Diggs aspect of this really is super interesting to me, because I don't know where you stand on this, but I stand in the camp that Kirk Cousins, I'm not going to, you know, bring in his win-loss record in primetime games or, you know, the moments where they look sometimes too big for Kirk Cousins. I know you shouldn't just forget about that stuff, but I want to, for the context of this conversation, because Kirk Cousins is kind of the perfect example of a guy that maybe you don't fully appreciate until you're no longer catching footballs from him. Right, I view him as one of, Evan, the most underrated deep ball accuracy quarterbacks in football. Yeah. There are guys that he is one of those guys that just makes throws, and he gets 19 attempts a game. And I always thought that the quote unquote drama between him and Diggs was far more scheme driven than it was personality driven. And I kind of want your thought process on Kirk Cousins and what Kirk Cousins' presence for Stephon Diggs did for his potential, not only fantasy value, but, you know, the value of him and whether or not he can duplicate what he did in Minnesota in Buffalo.
I think his stats are going to go down. I mean, I think he's not going to catch as many balls. I think that the accuracy of Josh Allen's deep ball, I mean, he could improve, but if what we've seen to this point maintains, I mean, I think that Stephon Diggs is going to go get balls that, I mean, he's just going to go get some Aaron balls. You know, and really, if you look at last year, I mean, if Stephon Diggs goes and gets like four or five of those, you know, deep downfield shots that just were errant, or the receiver just couldn't go get it, but Stephon Diggs can go get those, like almost like a dog chasing a frisbee down, you know, because that's what Stephon Diggs can, that's what John Brown can do. Now you have two of those guys. But I completely agree with your analysis of Kirk Cousins. I mean, the primetime thing is ridiculous. He played for the freaking Redskins. You know, like, he played for the Redskins. So, I think that Kirk Cousins is absolutely one of the most underrated passers and quarterbacks in the game. He's, you know, I think he's well above replacement level. He's you know, he makes a positive addition to your offense. But I just, you know, again, like the dog chasing down the frisbee, I think that Stephon Diggs is going to, just putting him around Josh Allen is going to make Josh Allen's efficiency rise, and he's just going to go get some of those errant balls.
Evan Silva here on the Western Hotline, and I always think about this, right? And percentages in anything is the difference between one or two things going differently, and that's what I do truly believe about, you know, this offense last year. Josh Allen was part of the reason that it wasn't a better or more efficient passing offense. There's no doubt about it. He led the league in uncatchable passes percentage. He also was last in the league in checkdowns. And I don't want to say that those two things are necessarily stats you can put hand in hand, but I do wonder, you know, what a Zach Moss and Devin Singletary backfield. Let's just put the New York Jets posted a tweet about, well, now the Jets have this dynamic 1-2 punch with Frank Gore and Le'Veon Bell. And listen, I'm a big Frank Gore fan. I think he did wonders for Devin Singletary, but he single-handedly roadblocked a lot of what this offense's efficiency when he was on the field. Zach Moss's insertion into this offense in place of Frank Gore, like, what do you think that potentially does for efficiency purposes for this offense, considering, I mean, they just were, the numbers bear out, they were one of the most inefficient offenses all of football when Frank Gore was on the field.
Yeah, Frank Gore, for many years now, really, since sort of the end of his prime, has been a guy that winds up playing more than, anyone anticipates, maybe even the teams that are signing him themselves, because the coaches just absolutely love him. Because he gets out there and he's the hardest working player on the team. All the players look up to him. The coaches even look up to him. I mean, I think he's the best coach on the Jets coaching staff right now. I mean, I would go with Frank Gore at head coach over Adam Gase if that was an option. He pass blocks. He's always in the right spot. He's just not explosive. And you're right. So that put a drain on their efficiency last year, and now they're trying to become more efficient by drafting Zach Moss in the third round. They're going to play Devin Singletary more, as they showed that they were very willing to do down the stretch last year, including the playoffs. He averaged 20 touches a game over their last six. I think that the efficiency of their rushing offense will also improve. This is a situation where, they're just going to have fresher legs on the field this year.
Evan, I don't know why this is the case, but the Bills, I love Brian Daboll. I think Daboll has done an unbelievably, just a remarkable job working, and has over the course of his career when he's been tasked with play calling, doing more with less. And I mean, this is a guy that had moderate success with Matt Moore, mind you, right? And Brady Quinn. And Brady Quinn later in his career, not like Brady Quinn early on. So, I think about this too. That's what makes it so hard for me to really comprehend why this team cannot scheme up. They just cannot scheme up running back screens. And I don't know whether it's because of Josh Allen. I don't know if, because of what how defenses want to defend Josh Allen, that screens just maybe aren't readily available to them. But it does blow my mind. I mean, you look at, if you watch a game of Tom Brady's, I mean, 80% of his passes are at or within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. He's not stretching the ball down the field. So I'm not saying I think the Bills need to convert Josh Allen into a guy that checks down the ball a bunch, but an easy way to jack up your completion percentage by 4 points, have more completions around the line of scrimmage. And they have a guy now in Diggs. They have a guy now like a John Brown who's not going to get double covered. These are guys now that they can insert in different ways. And I also think this too, is there a more unique tight end in terms of skill set than Dawson Knox? I mean, this is a guy that got an end around last year. I think they have such a unique skill set on offense that, doesn't it make sense that they should figure out ways to try to get Josh Allen going in that shorter area of the field?
Yeah, so, I think that when they drafted Josh Allen, and, everyone knows that all these guys came from Carolina, right? So I think that there's no doubt that when they were evaluating Josh Allen, they drew a lot of similarities to Cam Newton. And Cam Newton got off to a hotter start as a passer in his career than has Josh Allen so far. But one sort of development in Cam Newton's career was, he began his career as a fairly low percentage passer. And then in 2018, the Panthers, and this was actually after Bean and McDermott had left, but still, I mean, they can look at this blueprint and, they really focused on getting the ball out of Cam's hands quickly and to Christian McCaffrey. And Cam Newton completed like 67% of his passes that year, and you're right that they can throw bubble screens to Stephon Diggs and John Brown and even Dawson Knox and Devin Singletary and increase the efficiency and the the percentage, you know, the increasing the his completion percentage, but and also like getting him into more of a rhythm earlier in games, just getting him completions earlier in games. I think that they definitely have that at their disposal at this point.
All right. So last thing I'm going to ask you, Evan, is I'm overly interested in year three of Josh Allen, right? But I think I'm maybe more overly interested in year three of Lamar Jackson. The efficiency passing numbers, listen, they're unsustainable. So good, they're unsustainable, right? And I don't want to take I don't want it to make it sound like I'm taking a shot at Lamar Jackson, that I don't think he's as good as he's been. But it's like saying, you know, if you're going to drive a car 200 miles per hour, eventually you're going to run out of gas. It's not a sustainable way to drive a car. The same can be said about the style of which Lamar Jackson is winning and beating defenses. What are your expectations for year three? And is regression almost, like, is it almost a guarantee at this point?
It is from a touchdown rate standpoint. I mean, the Ravens had the fewest pass attempts in the NFL last year. And Lamar Jackson led the NFL in touchdown passes. That just doesn't happen, you know. So it's going to end up being an outlier season. I think his 36 touchdown passes are probably going to come down into like the 24, 25, 26 range. He's hit a 9% touchdown rate. That's just touchdowns over divided by pass attempts. Only three quarterbacks in NFL history have ever finished with 9%. Or more. So his percentage is going to come down. With that said, I think he's going to have another really good season. We know how dynamic he is with his legs. We know that Marquise Brown had a really big week one and had a really big game in their playoff loss to Tennessee. But other than that, I mean, he was coming off Lisfranc surgery on his foot, and he was pretty inconsistent. He was on the injury report like over half the year. Mark Andrews also, who scored 10 touchdowns.
Unbelievable.
He had an unbelievable year. He also, I mean, he only played 41% of the Ravens' offensive snaps last year because he also was dealing with a foot injury. I think they're going to be healthier. They're going to be more experienced in the passing game, and they're going to remain efficient. Probably not as efficient as they were last year. But I still think that they're going to have one of the best offenses in the league. They're another team that has a ton of continuity. Greg Roman and Wink Martindale, their offensive and defensive coordinator, easily could have been NFL head coaches this past offseason, and neither of them left. They're in a great spot.
You know, I look at Greg Roman and look at Brian Daboll, and it's not to say that nobody acknowledges them, because that's not true. I mean, they do. But is there two offensive coordinators that are maybe underappreciated or not talked about enough as those elite-style play callers? Because, you know, it definitely doesn't fall on me that without Brian Daboll, I'm not sure that Josh Allen is able to take incremental step in year two. And more importantly, I'm not sure that Josh Allen even remotely resembles the player he is right now without a Brian Daboll. And you know what? I'm going to say the same about Lamar Jackson, because I do think that you couldn't have found a better lock and key fit with Lamar Jackson than Greg Roman. I don't think, you know, if you're asking Lamar Jackson to run Kyle Shanahan's offense, is there that same level of success there? Like, I don't know or how about this? Like, if he's forced to run a Kevin Stefanski offense, is that something that is going to fit and really exploit all of the great things Lamar Jackson does? Like, these two are just so undervalued and under-talked about, I think.
I completely agree with that, and I almost don't even have anything to add to that. I just agree with everything you just said.
I should just have you on more, Evan, so you can tell me how right I always am. I like that.
I liked it when we used to argue, though.
I know. It was way more fun. It was way more fun. All right, buddy. Well, thanks again. Hey, I really appreciate you taking some time to talk. As always, you're so generous with your time, and I do really appreciate it, man. Keep up the great work. Love the stuff over at Establish the Run, and stay safe. And, hey, I'm hoping for some football here shortly, so we'll be keeping an eye on the account, man.
All right, Nate. Take it easy, man.
Appreciate it. Evan Silva there on the Western Hotline from Establish the Run. You can check him out at Evan Silva on Twitter, and at Establish the Run is his publication. Great stuff, as always, from Evan. I want to go to the phones real quick because Sean has been waiting patiently while Evan was on. Sean, thank you so much for calling in, and thanks for being so patient on hold there. What do you got for me?
Nate, what's up, my brother?
Nothing much, dude.
I was, I heard you on the Rock Pile, and I never got the final results of the A.J. Green Hall of Famer.
Oh, okay, so let me give you those results real quick. It was like 67-33. It was a big landslide victory for, no, he is not a Hall of Famer.
Okay, yeah, I'm on that side.
Okay.
And I you know, it's kind of like saying Matt Ryan's a Hall of Famer, in my opinion. You know, what are the credentials now for Hall of Famer?
They have risen, and they have risen, especially for wide receivers. They're going to be sky high.
Yeah, exactly. And that's not what I called about. But anyway, I just want to say, man, I do appreciate it. I listen to all your stuff, man. You're on fire every time, man. I love your takes. Besides the Cleveland Browns are going to, I love that they.
Damn you, Sean, for bringing that up.
It's hilarious. But anyways, man, I love all your takes, man.
Thanks, man.
Okay, so here's what I called about. And it's about this COVID, playing the games, not playing the games. We have got to start. The agenda has got to change, man. COVID went from death rates in March, April, and May to infected rates over the last month and a half. Now we're talking about who's getting infected. And the reason we're getting the numbers are going up is because we keep testing people. But infection can mean no symptoms, not sick at all, but yet we're going to add it to the death toll. Not only that, for every person that tests positive, they're adding 16 people to the count in that probable case. I don't know if you've been following anything on that. But here's my thoughts. We're adults. We understand that this is a virus.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
We understand the flu's a virus. Do people stop going to the freaking football game because the flu season's out? You know, we're adults. We can take care of ourselves now. Let people freaking get out and enjoy the game. Let's fill out the stadium. Who cares? I'm telling you, the death rate is so low now in this COVID that it really and truly should not be locking us up anymore. That's my take, Nate. I hope you guys can communicate on that, because the agenda that I hear on all the radio stations, can we play? I don't even know if we can play football. The infection rates are going up. We're going to have to shut down the season if someone infects. Infection does not mean getting sick. And I'll tell you what, I guarantee these athletes, most of them do not care about that either. So anyway, there's my take. That's a hot take, though. Enjoy listening to you, Nate.
Hey, Sean, thanks for the kind words. I do really appreciate it, man. Thanks for engaging. And I do really appreciate, and listen, I don't fully agree with you, Sean. I don't. But I do appreciate you bringing your comments, your commentary to the conversation, because I think it's important that we do talk about people that believe in what you're saying, which is, hey, listen, you know, infectious rates have, yes, gone up, and death rates have gone down, certainly. Here's one thing I will say to you, Sean, is my girlfriend got COVID and has since recovered. I tested negative, and I tested a negative for antibodies. So I did not get the virus, nor do I have the antibodies, which is weird because she lives with me and she did not infect me, right? That's like, that kind of goes against everything this virus says it does, right? Having said all that, Sean, the one area that I will say that is concerning the hell out of my girlfriend is she still has mild symptoms. She still has a mild cough. She still has fatigue. I would say pretty general fatigue, like daily. So the things that we don't ultimately know are the things we have to worry about the most with this virus. And I would say to you, Sean, too, with the outbreaks happening in Houston, and not only that, but you mentioned some statistics. And the other statistic I wanted to bring up in this is death on arrivals. Death on arrivals have been astronomically high in Texas and in Florida. They are not being counted as COVID-related deaths. So I do want to just kind of pause on, and not only that, I want to pause on any potential numbers in terms of death rate we're receiving from places like Texas and Florida who have been doctoring numbers.
The reason that the death rate is lagging and that the infection rate's going up but the death rate is going down is because it takes you a little while to die.
Yes, that's right.
It takes you 4 to 6 weeks to die of this. So we're probably about a week or two out
from seeing a spike for those death numbers.
And
as
it's
well.
Already happening. You look inside of the hospitals in Houston and they're overrun.
They're overrun. And that's the thing, right, Sean? Like, a lot of this doesn't necessarily have to do with whether or not you die. A lot of this does, Sean, have to do with if our ICUs are overrun, we can't take care of everyone. And then let's say the infection rate, and also, Sean, the other thing that I don't necessarily agree with you on is the fact that just we have more cases because there's more testing. You know, like if my girlfriend took a pregnancy test and it came back negative, it's not because she took the pregnancy test. Or if she took it three times and only one time it came positive, does it, you know what I'm saying? So like, I think that ideology is slightly flawed in terms of, hey, there's just more tests because there's more testing. Those positive tests are there regardless of the testing. So I think there's a lot to unpack. Sean, I seriously, thank you for calling. Thank you for giving me a different spin on what we've been talking about this show. I appreciate your thought process. I appreciate you engaging and not fearing that I'm some liberal hack who's just going to shoot down your opinions, because I don't want to be known that. I want you to be able to call in, Sean, and feel like, I know this is going to sound lame, but like, this is a safe place that you can say something that I might not agree with, but not have me call you an idiot and call you a loser and say that you're dumb and have no idea what you're talking about. I genuinely appreciate you calling in and engaging and having a different point of view. I think that's really important in this whole conversation, and I appreciate you saying those nice things about me, considering we don't clearly agree on everything, and that does mean a lot to me. So thanks so much, Sean, for the call, and thanks for engaging at the show. Quick time out because Greg Thompson, Cover One, joining us next here on WGR.
Stephon Diggs is going to go get balls. He's just going to go get some Aaron balls. You know, and really, if you look at last year, if Stephon Diggs goes and gets like four or five of those, you know, deep downfield shots that just were errant, or the receiver just couldn't go get it, but Stephon Diggs can go get those, like a almost like a dog chasing a frisbee down.
That is Establish the Run's Evan Silva. I am Nate Geary. Welcome back to Sports Talk Saturday. We've got another guest hot on deck right now for you as Cover One's Greg Thompson joins me on the Western Hotline. First and foremost, Greg, my dude, how are you, brother?
Not too bad. What's going on? Another delightful Saturday.
Another delightful Saturday. Well, you're not here in Buffalo, so you don't know that it's not actually that delightful currently because it's just absolutely pouring outside. But it's okay. I mean, it's delightful in the sense that you and I are getting to talk.
I like it. I'll take it.
So typically when I start to think or have to talk about the salary cap, I start thinking that, oh gosh, there's numbers. Oh gosh, there's math. Oh gosh, let me get somebody smarter to talk about this. So here's you. This is why you're here. You're here to talk about smart things that I don't know about. So what we're talking about today, Greg, is obviously with the NFL and the salary cap issues that are going to occur due to COVID, and more importantly, the loss of revenue across the league in terms of in-stadium revenue. Howard and I talked about this yesterday, Greg. I mean, just alone off in-stadium revenue, we're looking at over $1 billion in losses. And one team in particular, the Dallas Cowboys, counts for, this includes TV concessions, ticket, I'm sorry, no TV, it's ticket, concessions, parking, everything that wouldn't be included in in-stadium revenue. They're up to about $650 million in what could be potential losses for the Dallas Cowboys this year. So what in that are the NFL trying to do, and explaining it to folks who might not fully understand the nuance, fourth time I've used that word on the show today, that the NFL salary cap ultimately is going to, what kind of changes is the league going to have to make in order to make this thing smooth on the books?
So I think the first step is to maybe take a slight step back and help fans see through a lens that we use the term salary cap very loosely. What the NFL actually has is a revenue sharing model. Now, that revenue sharing, you know, it gets haggled. It's gone from 47 to 48.5, 49.5. That was a big topic here in the latest CBA, where, you know, they're close to 50-50. It's not quite 50-50, but it's actually a direct equation of football-related revenue that comes in each year. The owners get their 51.5%, the players get their 48.5%, and that 48.5% becomes a salary cap. But the salary cap isn't some arbitrarily agreed number that, hey, everybody gets to spend $200 million because we've decided to give you that money. It's a direct equation based off how much money they make. If you're $1 billion, let's use the exact number. If it's $1 billion, that's $31.2 million per team that you now have to figure out, hey, how do we make up for that number? I've seen some estimates and talking with some of the other guys at overthecap.com and spottrack.com. Some people project it from $40 to $70 million of a shortfall this coming year that would now come out of that number. What they're actually talking about is, and it seems Tom Pelissero is a reporter who's done a great job on this recently, it seems that there's pretty universal agreement that neither the NFL owners nor the NFLPA and their players want there to be a one-year plummet of the salary cap. That's not good for anybody. Anybody who's coming up on free agency, veterans whose deal would now have to get cut, and then they get cut and there's no money to sign anywhere else. No one wants that. The issue comes in how do we fix it? You mentioned the word smoothing. The NFL's initial proposal was that let's take 35% of this year's revenue, hide it away in escrow. Everybody, they didn't really get into it, but everybody would basically now agree to take a one-third pay cut off of this year and we'll save it for next year. The NFL players countered with, we don't want any money in escrow. We want to save it for 9 years, take little bits off of each of the next 9 years, hide it into 2021 and spread it out that way. And they asked for all the guaranteed contracts to still get paid whether they play games or not. My guess is that it's somewhere in the middle where they take a little bit off of this year. I had, you know, guessed that it was 5 or 10% off this year and then spread it out over the next 4 or 5 years where everybody has heard there's a huge new TV deal coming where you throw Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and
streaming
all those
services
into play.
Right. Yeah.
So then it'll come into play where there is extra money coming. Everybody knows that. Let's take a little bit off of each of those next 4 or 5 years, see if we can combine that together and just hold the line that it's about $200 million again next year rather than drop into something crazy like $140 million.
So I guess the this is going to divert a little bit, then we can kind of return back to this part of the conversation. I think what interests and piques my interest in this conversation now kind of turns to fiscal responsibility, right? I think what we're going to see, Greg, is teams over the last few years, and maybe there's no better example of this than the Buffalo Bills, right? A team who took on some dead cap hits in the first season of this regime, are now in a healthy cap situation with guys that need to be signed here in the next several months and leading into next year as well. And then you look at a team like the Los Angeles Rams, who have recklessly spent money and then recklessly made, you know, roster cut decisions on players who have yet to even see that new contract. Therefore, you know, how much do you think of the last few years spending, and let's use the Rams and Bills as an example of two extremes in this case, like, how much do you think this COVID situation is ultimately going to affect the well-being of franchises? And how much credit do you then want to give to a Brandon Bean? And maybe how much scorn do you want to get to a Les Snead? Obviously, nobody could have foreseen this coming. But you also can't just spend money recklessly without there being some sort of insurance or safe fail. And I think Los Angeles is maybe the glaring example of that.
You're spot on. And so first, my confidence that they're not going to let it plummet next year is because there are several teams that
that literally can't. Right. That, like, they can't let it.
I don't know if they could find an equation. I don't know if there is a scenario where they could survive. The Rams are a great one, but the Cowboys, the Falcons, the Vikings, there's several teams that there's no equation where they net out okay. So Brandon Bean's diligence and discipline and good financial decision-making would make it less painful than many teams, but every team would be crippled if they let it happen.
So, like, you know, if you're – I guess the next question has to be, well, how do you make a balanced playing field – if the cap were to go down, right, and it were to plummet, and teams like you just mentioned Dallas, Minnesota, right, these teams that would be very clearly over the cap, I would think it's got to be hard to say, well, we can't really penalize you because how could this have been foreseen, but also we can't really go into the season with you guys having 20 more million in cap, in essentially cap spend than the next closest team. Like, how do you create the competitive balance in a situation that is so irregular but maybe so imperfect?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some creative solutions thrown out there. The NBA did an amnesty clause at one point that, hey, you could cut, each team could cut one contract and spread it out over 5 years rather than taking the dead cap hit all at once. You could have some flexibility where, you know, they're talking about the smoothing as an NFL league as a whole. Maybe they could offer each team that cushion to say, hey, each team has $70 million over the next 5 years in this fund. You can decide how much of that you want to pull out, but everybody gets to use the same fund. There's a couple things there. My guess is that they try to keep it consistent across the board so there's no manipulation, and that the NFLPA doesn't want 1 year's worth of players to take the brunt of this. They want to spread it out over, you know, a longer term so that you're not having just one group that, hey, you just happened to be the unlucky one, that your contract year was coming up in 2021. Sorry, tough luck. They want to spread that out, and I think that's reasonable.
Host the Cover One Buffalo podcast, Greg Thompson, here on the Wester Hotline. Greg, I started today by kind of having an open conversation with folks about, hey, like, if you're a season ticket holder, and let's say that the Bills in New York State comes down with a very similar sentiment that the Baltimore Ravens did on Thursday, coming out and saying, listen, as of right now, we're going to be at 25% capacity. Pittsburgh has come out and said, whatever capacity we end up having, fans will be forced to wear masks. I guess, where do you sit on this? Because I think there's probably a fraction of people that say, listen, we're all adults. I had a caller, Sean, call and say, hey, you know, we're all adults. If we want to be out there, let us make that decision. We're adults. We can make that decision. Or do you sit in the camp of, listen, the NFL may not have a say in this at the end of the day, and we should allow our local and state governments who have a better, you know, finger on the pulse of public health, because that's at the end of the day what this is about, Greg. This isn't about whether or not you are safe sitting in a stadium. It's about the bigger picture. And I know it could be hard for people to sort of deduce it down to that, but, like, that's where we are. This is a public health crisis, not a personal health crisis. So where do you stand on, you know, hey, I've said this too, Greg, that I think if you're looking at anywhere in the country in terms of the 32 NFL teams, there may not be a city that is more prepared to actually have fans in the stands than Buffalo because of the reduced numbers of infections. I mean, 1% of the positive tests, or 1% of the 63 or so thousand tests that were taken yesterday in New York State, 1% came back positive, and New York State counts for less than 1% of the entire positive rate of the country right now. Like, this is an area of the country that actually probably could have football games. Having said that, I don't know that we should.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Again, I'm kind of a math nerd, so in my mind, it's hard for me to reconcile how significant of a difference there is between managing maybe 200 or 300 people in a facility between the two teams, the, you know,
game day crew, the medical teams, and that's those 300 people versus, let's say it is 25% and you're talking 15,000 people, that's just such an enormous leap. And that I have always long held that I would rather see football with no fans than no football at all. And if there's a path to do that, I'm comfortable with that. Now, I'm also in a different group. I've lived away from Western New York for almost 20 years now. I get back for a game or two each year. A lot of times it's preseason during travel with family time. So I also am in that spot where I love the home field advantage that the Bills get, but I don't get a chance to be part of it all that often. So I get the passion from those season ticket holders and wanting to do that. I do think there's an element of sometimes we need people to save us from ourselves and to know that, hey, you might be okay, but you don't know who you're bringing it home to. I have a hard time finding a path where you're going to be able to keep that many people safe and then bring that home with 15,000 people not knowing if they're doing that. And more so, my fear is if that were to go the wrong way, and even if the risk is low, going the wrong way could mean football gets canceled. I'm not comfortable taking that leap, and that's probably selfish on my part that I'm putting football above things, but I do think that some of those kind of decisions, it'll come the same way with how we approach schools, how we approach restaurants, yeah, businesses that are in person. Sometimes we have to take the more safe approach to allow us to open back up and then ease into further ones. Maybe we can get to fans in the stands for the playoffs. So maybe that's the compromise.
Hey, man. You're a smart guy, and I always appreciate when I have you on so that you can educate me and everybody else that's listening. So we appreciate you coming on, talking some salary cap with us. Tell the folks where they can find your work and where they can listen to you.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man. Come on over, cover1.net. You can find me on Twitter, at Greg Thompsett, GREGTOMPSETT. Always having fun with Bills fans and going back and forth, answering questions and trying to be able to make some of the – boring, complex parts of the football world a little more digestible and make it a little more palatable for people. So come on over, have some fun. Appreciate having me on as always. I hope you guys have an awesome day.
Thanks, boss. Appreciate you very much. Greg Thompsett there on the West Her Hotline. Time out. Let's preview Hour 3 because that's coming up next here on WGR. All right, welcome back to the redheaded stepchild segment of my show that gets absolutely no love, is overlooked, and I apologize to any of you, redheaded stepchildren who feel the same way in their own family dynamic. But this poor, last segment of my show just never gets any love. That's okay. It is what it is. Quick timeout, and then we will bring you back. And I've got a great final hour here set up for you. I've got Jessica Smetana. She's going to join us at 1:30. She's a producer and writer over at Sports Illustrated. She's at 1:30, and she's a Notre Dame grad and worked for NBC Sports as well. So we're going to talk a little bit about the impact of COVID on college football, but particularly Notre Dame because they are not in the conference. And then coming up next, Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports is going to join us. We're going to talk about the NBA return to action because that starts on the 20th, which is only 9 days from now. So we're going to talk about the bubble, what's happening inside of it, what to expect from teams, and maybe some predictions on who actually might come out on top. That's all coming up next here on Sports Talk Saturday on WGR.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.